Accession number 19913, Reel 2.
Cunningham Bowes, Reel 2. Any other memories from the occupation of Germany that we ought to record?
Not really. There was a mutiny in the battalion, the 1st Battalion, the York and Lancasters, in 1946, 46, 47, I can't remember which, when we were at, I think it was Brunswick, and I wasn't involved in that, incidentally. But the battalion was virtually placed under arrest, the whole battalion. They brought in other troops to surround the barracks, so we couldn't go anywhere. And I can't remember what that was all about. I've no idea what that was all about. But that was the first mutiny I was in. The second one was in Korea, of course, which we'll come to.
So what happened after the occupation of Germany?
I came back. Well, I was posted. The battalion stayed in Germany. I was posted back to the United Kingdom to become an instructor at the depot of the York and Lancashire Pontefract, where I was to instruct recruits straight from Civvy Street for the first 6 weeks of their training. I did not like this kind of work at all. There's a brutalising effect in that process that didn't appeal to me.
Why should there be a brutalising effect?
Well, it's a way of... it was the army's way of making you what they wanted you to be. So whether you were a mild-mannered person or an aggressive person, you'd have it knocked out of you. And the part of that process was a brutalising effect. In my particular case, as a young recruit, I can remember I had a corporal who was in charge of the barrack room who had won the military medal in Burma with the West Yorkshire Regiment, and he was an absolute swine when he'd had a drink. And he would come in to the barrack room and grab a bass broom and poke you with it. Are you awake? You know, and he was an absolute swine. Fine when he was sober, but absolutely. Now, a lot of this went on. I can remember that as a guy would arrive at the barracks for his training, there'd be junior NCOs lined up and saying, well, I fancy his shoes, or I like his jacket. And that was the name of the game. You won't need these again, you know, you're in the army now. So a lot of that went on. If you like, it was selective pilfering. If you were in any way small, if you were a person of low mentality, if you were a person of lacking in good character, they'd find you and they'd pick on you. So it had no appeal for me, and I volunteered at the first opportunity for a draft to join the Royal Northumberland Fusiliers in Gibraltar, Central Mediterranean Forces.
About which year would this be?
1947. Actually, prior to that, because I've jumped quite a bit. Before that occurred, I'd been attached to the King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry. But I was only with them for a very short period of time, something like 6 weeks. And that was at Ripon in North Yorkshire. Incidentally, also going back a bit, I'd been at Ripon before doing a mines and booby traps course where I became quite talented in making booby traps, and I used that to great advantage during the Korean War, is to make some hideous anti-personnel mines, booby traps. So anyway, I didn't stay with them very long, and then managed to get myself on this draft to join the 2nd Battalion of the Royal Northumberland Fusiliers in Gibraltar, 1947. By this time I was a full corporal. I eventually became the senior corporal of the battalion. The 2nd Battalion was put in suspended animation, and they made us the 1st Battalion, the regular battalion. So we transferred from the... And in fact, all regular battalions, with the exception of the Royal Northumberland Fusiliers, have companies A, B, C, D. The Royal Northumberland Fusiliers have W, X, Y, Z support. And that's because we kept the old company identities from the 2nd Battalion to the 1st Battalion. And that made us quite unique, because we were the only battalion with those company letter identifications in the Korean War.
What was it like serving in Gibraltar?
I found it very difficult. I had a difficult time coping with it. I found it very restricting. You couldn't do this, you couldn't do that. The civilian population didn't want to know troops. They'd had previous battalions there that had not served the local girls well. So by the time we got there, there was an anti-British feeling. So you couldn't find a girlfriend. So what we were left with was the choice of going to Spain in the brothels, or, as I did, I went off to see places like Spanish Morocco, Tangier, what have you. But I spent 2 years in Gibraltar, and I didn't like it a great deal at all. And strangely, of all the places that I've been to, and I've been in about 38 countries, Gibraltar is one of the places I would like to go back to.
Were you there very long?
2 years. Yeah. No, 47. No, to 1950.
47 to 50.
Yeah.
So then, presumably, you got a post into Korea?
No, we were posted back to the United Kingdom to be training battalion at the School of Infantry at Warminster. And that was in the January. And then, of course, the war started, as you know, in June. Korean War started in June. And we were earmarked to be a component part of 29th Independent Infantry Brigade Group. The first brigade from the United Kingdom. Waffen was supposed to be the finest winter warfare equipped brigade ever to leave the United Kingdom. And I want to tell you, if we were the best that they could put up with, if we were the best equipped, God knows what it would be like to have been just an ordinary, because the equipment was terrible.
In what way specifically?
Well, there were windproofs which were valuable whilst they were intact. But if you stood near a fire and you got a spark, it burnt like rice paper. And of course, once you got a hole in a windproof, that was a valuable piece of a top with a hood and trousers. But apart from that, we had a string vest, which allowed that insulating
layer.
Thank you. Between yourself and the shirt. They were uncomfortable to wear, but they were useful for that reason, because you've got this this insulating layer of warm air. But the only thing of real value was a heavy-duty pullover with a string pull at the neck. They were good. They gave us woolen five-fingered gloves, followed by a mitten, two-fingered mitten, followed by skiing gauntlets that were strung around the neck. And they were absolutely useless, because how can you fire a weapon? So they didn't live very long. If you use the woolen gloves and stuck them against metal, they just stuck and ripped apart. All my winter warfare clothing, other than what I was wearing, including my overcoat, my sleeping bags, were all blown up in the Battle of Happy Valley in January the 3rd, 4th, 1951. And I went through the winter just dressed as I would be in the United Kingdom, apart from a winter pullover. And I think this is probably where I got my my arthritis. That was my claim, anyway.
Can you tell me about going out to Korea, please?
Well, I volunteered to go to Korea. In fact, I was posted to the depot of the East Yorkshire Regiment at Hull. And when the posting arrived, I was duty NCO in the orderly room at lunchtime. There was no one else in the order room, and I took hold of that and I said, well, I'm nowhere am I going to go to Hull, nor am I going to go to the East Yorkshire Regiment. I screwed up the posting, tossed it in the waste paper basket, and never heard another word about it. And I went off with my battalion to Korea.
What job did you have with the battalion?
I was a senior NCO in charge of the battalion command post. That was where the commanding officer controlled the battalion, TAC headquarters. And a very privileged position, because he gave me access to everything but top secret. So I knew what was going on most of the time. And I like the work.
Anything happen on the journey out?
I think we had two suicides on the way out. One was a chap I knew very well, can't remember his name for the sake of me, and he suffered very badly from seasickness. He was seasick the moment he looked at the troop ship. So for him, life was an absolute misery. And we sailed to Korea on the Empire Hallidale, slowest troop ship in the mercantile marine. And it took us 6 weeks and 5 days to get to Korea. A nightmare. Now, I'm a good sailor. On the way out to Korea and approaching Singapore, there was a I don't think it was a hurricane.
Typhoon.
And we were literally on the periphery of that. So, you know, we were nowhere, in no way subjected to the full energy and stress. And that was incredible. The seas, you could look up, the seas were up there, and look down, and you couldn't see the sea. Incredible. And yet, I never felt seasick. But this lad went missing, and the assumption was that he'd committed suicide.
By doing what?
By jumping off.
And was the other one from the RNF as well?
Yes, I think, in fact, I think he was thrown over.
Why should that have happened?
Oh, well, our battalion consisted of regular soldiers and reservists that were recalled. And, of course, the battalion consisted of regulars and reservists. And the reservists were all World War II veterans. And I felt very sorry for them because, you know, when you survive one war and you've gone home and you've got on with the role of being a husband, father and provider, what you don't want is to be told that you've got to go back and play soldiers again, especially infantry. So there were some mean minds about that were exceedingly difficult for the younger NCO cadre to deal with, because you've got the attitude, whereas, what the hell can you tell me? You've never been in action, you haven't been in the army 5 minutes, and just because you've got those things on your arm doesn't mean a damn thing. In other words, I'm the veteran, I'm the experienced one. But eventually, that modified, and I think we benefited from having the reservists. They taught us things about survival. That were helpful. But I think that in fact, I don't think the second death was an RNF. I think he was a ship's RSM, thinking about it, but I stand corrected. I think it was the ship's RSM that was thrown over by RNF reservists. So, you know, it was eventful. Eventful.
Did you witness this event?
No.
Did you know the RSM?
Well, I would have known him, yes. I would have known him because my role as NCO in charge of the battalion command post functioned aboard ship. I was, if you like, the runner contact between the commanding officer and the adjutant, the intelligence officer and the signals officer, and the ship's, not the bridge, but the ship's communications, so that when stuff came in for the battalion, you know, I was given the message and I conveyed it to whomever it was for, the adjutant or the CO, signals or intelligence. So I would have known the ship's RSM.
Did he deserve to be thrown over?
I don't think anybody's deserving of being thrown over, but it's a difficult role, being a regimental sergeant major. And today, with the advantage of maturity, I see that role as an essential role, and I see it as a very important role. A good RSM can bring men together in times of adversity like nobody else can. For example, on the Imjin, round about the second or third day of the battle, we were getting into very serious trouble, and the RSM was appealing to the walking wounded to go back in again. Now, when you've got a wound and you think, you know, I've done my bit, my honourable bit, I can go out now, go to hospital, and thank God for that. If you're lucky, you've got a blighty touch, as we called it. And when you can persuade men who have been wounded that they've got to go back in again, and those men have got the guts to do it, I'm full of admiration for both the walking wounded and the RSM for his persuasiveness. Very difficult.
Can you tell me about arriving in Korea, please?
Well, I think the first impression, that's the most lasting impression with all Korean veterans, is the smell of the place. Stench was terrible, and this was brought about by the fact that they put human excrement on their paddy fields, and there was a lot of dead around that was not being buried. The Chinese, for example, don't bury their dead as we do. They dig a shallow grave and a couple of rice sacks, and you've got a mound. Dreadful smell. And the impact of going back in time, historically, into a society that had not left the Middle Ages, was incredible. They were years away from the 20th century, years away. I think we had little regard for the Koreans when we first arrived, no regard at all. And of course we had absolutely no regard for the ROC forces, because they were mainly young men that had been ripped off the streets, and given something like 10 days training and thrown into the line. Well, you know, you can't really expect men to perform well with that kind of a background. And of course, when you've seen a ROC battalion run, as I have, at Happy Valley, doesn't exactly fill you with endearment for them. So the smell of the place was the first offending, and then followed by the winter, the most appalling winters. I've since discovered from my own research that the first winter of the war was the coldest winter, with temperatures of 70-odd degrees of freezing, of frost. 40, 40, 42, 43, 44 degrees below freezing. So, below zero, I should say, not freezing, below zero, 70-odd degrees of frost. Living in a hole in the ground in the infantry and having to extricate yourself from what sparse comfort there was in that hole, to attend stand to at something like 4 o'clock in the morning in those kind of temperatures was nightmarish. Incredibly cool. And of course the wind that came down from Siberia whistled right down the peninsula of Korea and cut you in half. Terrible. I loathe the wind today. I don't like the rain, don't like the wind, and I don't like the cold. I have lasting memories I shall take to my grave. I can remember on one occasion, after the Battle of Happy Valley, when we had a lot of NCO casualties in the January 51, my job, I was exempt all regular NCO duties because I had no relief. I took my sleep when I could find it, the time to get it, and though others saw this as a privilege, I promise you it wasn't a privilege, but because we were so short of NCOs, I volunteered on this occasion to do a guard. And you were limited to half an hour because it was so cold, and I did 4 hours. And it took them 12 hours to thaw my legs out. Oh, dear. I've got terrible freezing cold injury on the legs. Damage, terrible damage.
Can you take me through your experiences in Korea, please, step by step?
Well, of course, my first battle experience was at Happy Valley. And that in itself was quite an experience because I was sleeping in a dugout. It would be round about 1:15, 1:30 in the morning when the attack took place. And one of my chaps jumped into the dugout, and I used to sleep with my Sten gun across my stomach, and I grabbed the Sten gun and did a rough alignment on him because I didn't know who he was. It startled me, and he said, "They're here," and I said, "Who's here?" You know. He said, "They're here." I was like, "Where?" And all of a sudden, it was as if someone had pulled plugs out of my ear, and I could hear the machine guns going and mortars firing, which momentarily I had not heard because he'd frightened me. And I confess, I was petrified. I was terrified. But